Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and theantimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back and alive and well on this Monday, July 10th, 2017, the most interesting and crazy and corrupt times in possibly human history. There's more of us now than there's ever been on this planet. We got billions and billions of people having to deal with the things going on with the Earth, the climate, space, you know, and all the unknowns and all the knowns and the variables and the controls and the corporatocracies and the empires. We've got this awesome tool called the internet, which is bringing us all together while simultaneously dividing us all. That's what enabled us to have this show, and that's what we're doing tonight. We're bringing out a message that maybe not, not everybody is going to be talking about. This is a message that maybe contrary to the mainstream narratives, and we're just going to be talking about a bunch of stuff tonight. I've got my awesome panel together, my longtime co-host DB Schwartz on the line. What's up, dude? How you doing tonight?
Hey, man. I don't know, dude. Trying to decipher the G20, trying to figure out what the hell is going on. It looks like this unipolar world plan they had is finally just crashing and burning now.
G20 was crazy. All those anarchists out there burning shit down and clashing.
Even in Germany, they're awake enough to realize that globalism just kills jobs on a local level because it's a race to the bottom. It's nothing to do with extending opportunity to people in poorer countries. In fact, we know that we go into those poorer countries and just take what we need by military force. So globalism was never about that. It was just a race to the bottom and to get all of us to accept that.
Basically, yeah. It's like they extract the wealth from these poor countries, third and second world countries like in Africa, and then they use the wealth that they create to make companies, which then extracts the wealth from the poor working people here in the developed world, in the United States, Western Europe, and increasingly over in Asia as well. So, yeah, dude, this is pretty big. I don't remember the last time G20 was that crazy, like that violent and opposed that much. Also joining us tonight is our special co-host, and journalist with the Anti-Media, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake? How you doing, man?
Hey, pretty good. I read an article today about climate change that put it in a way that I have never seen before. And I'm trying to figure out a way to summarize it, but it may be difficult for me. But essentially, the predictions of scientists in the past were conservative estimates, and we could be looking at like a minimum 7-degree temperature change. Now, for context, 10 years ago, 2 was considered terrible. So just in the last 10 years, it's gotten that much worse. And they say it could be up to a 10-degree temperature change. So for context, if that happens, you're talking about pretty cataclysmic changes on the Earth that'll be happening within by 2100. So much so that we're not really leaving much for our children to inherit, and it's going to be bleak, but I think we all know that. And I think right now we're living in just this great dream. This is the dream generation. We don't understand what we're doing with the global economy, like you said, and we don't understand what we're doing to the Earth. So
sure as hell don't understand what we're doing on foreign policy either.
Yeah. So I when I just listen to people talking on the internet, a lot of times I just start laughing. you know, here's a fact that's interesting. So obviously our lungs need oxygen, but that is just part of what we breathe. So the article is talking about the fraction of carbon dioxide is growing, and it just crossed 400 parts per million. And the high-end estimates from current trends suggest it's going to hit 1,000 ppm by 2100. So at that concentration, compared to what the air we breathe now, human cognitive ability is going to decline 21%. By 2100, just from the air we breathe. That's a stunning, I'm just blown away by this. And you're talking about temperatures that are going to be people working fields in like in some very arid places. In years past, they would have been able to tend these fields. But the workers now, they will get kidney failure working in the heat that they're working in. And without kidney dialysis, you die within a pretty quick period of time. And then you have 600 million people that are living on the coasts that are going to be affected by changes in sea level. So this article, it's pretty incredible. It's by NY Mag. You know, I don't know what else this magazine does, but it kind of summarizes how we have an inability to grasp, even on a fictional level, what's going to happen with climate change, because we're used to telling stories about ourselves as individuals. We're not used to telling stories about ourselves as a species, and we're not used to those stories being about our species ending. But we've had five great extinctions on the Earth. We like to think of them as these extinction events. We like to think of them as all being caused by asteroids. But the reality is the majority of them were caused by climate change. These were different kinds of climate change. Climate change has took place over the course of millions of years, whereas opposed to this climate change has literally taken place over the course of like three decades. So it's really time for people to start getting real about climate change and our role in it and everything we do. And stop fucking around on petty stuff, I would say. But G20 certainly isn't petty, so.
Yeah, and at this point in time, I think many people would argue that it's kind of too late to, like, do something and reverse,
yeah.
Reverse the course. But should be definitely, like, concerned about slowing it down and then also preparing for what's going to be happening with it, you know.
Well, it's going to have to be carbon recapture. That's the only way. I mean, the scientists, they all know that we can't stop what's happened now. I don't know if that means we should just do whatever the hell we want at this point, but we literally cannot reverse what's happening now. But the only way to prevent literally billions of people dying, which is funny, because it's not billions of people dying from depopulation caused by New World Order governments. It's not caused by vaccines. It's not caused by false flags. It's caused by our own cumulative efforts. However,
just us. It's us killing us.
It's us killing us. However, most of the carbon emissions were caused by just 100 companies. 100 corporations contributed 80% of the carbon emissions that have decimated the environment. So maybe that is a New World Order conspiracy. It's subconscious, though. It's not conscious. I don't think they set out to destroy the Earth. They're just pure human greed and avarice caused it to happen.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people, especially Stephen Hawking, and he's been railing against this for like pretty hard now for a couple of years. In fact, there's a new documentary coming out on BBC that's about Stephen Hawking and his idea that that human beings are going to have to escape Earth for the species to evolve to survive. Otherwise, it's going to die out here from our own doing, basically. Whether it's our own technological advances, climate change, or massive wars. Stephen Hawking, you know, is predicting he's basically saying he guarantees that within the next 100 to 1,000 years that there's going to be some kind of world-ending or human-ending event, caused by humans, and that we need to go out and colonize space to keep the species viable or whatever. Jake, I wanted to get your take on this new development from Mars. I don't know if you guys have heard about this yet, but a new study is saying that, basically Martian soil is so replete with chemicals and stuff that life can't be sustained on the surface of Mars that they know of. Do you think this throws a wrench into the plans of, some of these super rich people, including Elon Musk, has been talking a lot about colonizing Mars, but this study kind of changes a lot of that stuff because they're saying it's much too poisonous for life to be, sustained out there.
The kind of terraforming that would be required for us to colonize Mars is so, we're almost talking about the same kind of technology as changing the Earth. So at the same times, we'd be trying to turn the clock back on Earth. We'd be trying to change Mars too. There's an incredible science fiction trilogy by Kim Stanley Robinson called Mars. The first one's called Red Mars. The second one's called Green Mars. And the third one's called Blue Mars. And it's about, it's hard sci-fi about terraforming Mars and actually changing it into an Earth-like planet. And, that technology is probably, hundreds of years from the future. So, yeah, in the near future, we don't have the bandwidth to do much because we just have a very depleted, as much as we've advanced on having smartphones and having the internet and whatnot, we have not advanced much in terms of space colonization. But we do need to get some humans into space so that we don't have all of our eggs in one basket. And at some point, one would hope we'll have the ability to terraform Mars, or set up a colony on the moon, or and we just need to get people off Earth and incubate these people against the ignorance of our home planet, so that maybe in the future we'll have more of a continue in the sci-fi vein, maybe more of an Arthur C. Clarke type moon. In The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, he wrote about a libertarian colony on the moon governed by an AI. And, I think in the future, I don't think all humans are going to die. I think billions of them are, but humans are going to go on. We just have to get some of us off world, and then we'll go on, and people will write stories about the days we're living in now, of this kind of dream ignorance that we're living through right now, and it'll be legendary, and hopefully they'll learn from it, and hopefully when they start colonizing the rest of the solar system, they'll have learned from it, and we won't be so ignorant by then.
DB, I want to bring you in on this because I know we talk often about how some of these super rich people aren't concerned so much about the planet because they don't even plan on staying here anyway. What do you think about this? And the other news story I want to circle into this is the Space Corps, which is a new program that's Congress is putting into the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, which is the big military budgeting that goes through it once a year. The Congress is now putting into the budget Space Corps, where they're going to start developing a space military programs and stuff like that, which who knows what it'll eventually entail. But when something gets wrapped into the NDAA like this, it normally winds up becoming law because the president doesn't like veto this thing very often because it's the big military spending legislation. And if a president vetoes it, well, then the media is going to jump all over you. And it's something you don't do as a president. And the people in Congress, they don't vote against it. It's just one of those things that goes through every year, regardless of how controversial it is. Because remember, the NDAA is also the one that They codified, indefinite detention without trial of U.S. citizens into, you know, and so people, they wrap up some really horrible, horrible legislation into this stuff. And, you know, I don't trust the military with domestic foreign policy. I sure as hell don't trust the military with intergalactic foreign policy. I mean, come on, do we really want Donald Trump running our spatial, you know, our space foreign policy too? That sounds like a really, really bad idea. Anyway, DB, this news about Mars, the climate being all jacked up, and the fact that these guys are on the verge of a world war, and then now we're launching this space military programming. What do you make of it all, dude? DB, we're not hearing you, dude.
Yeah,
that's, I wonder if he's got his mic on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll get back to him. Jake, I know you and me briefly talked about this space program. What do you make of it?
Well, I think Donald Trump should actually be in charge of the entire matrix that we're living in. I think Donald Trump should be – he's our daddy. He's our big daddy, and he should be in charge of everything. Why? I mean, he knows how to run businesses, dude.
Why stop him at just the presidency? You know?
Yeah, no. I mean, he should be regulating the stars' temperature. He should be regulating how black holes operate. I mean, Donald Trump. I mean, his business acumen extends to intergalactic space operations, right?
I just honestly at this point I just hope that some aliens come down and put the people running this who think they're running the show down here in check. Maybe
any alien, I mean, I don't know, aliens may have come here already. I mean, a more rudimentary alien may have come. I don't know how they would have gotten here, quite frankly, because with our current technology, with our fastest space probe right now, it would take humans 80,000 years to get to the nearest star. 80,000 years. So imagine the technological leap that you're talking about to be easily traversing these distances. And you're telling me that they're in like a tinfoil saucer pan flying through the sky? No, that's not the way it is. And they're sure as hell not going to be fucking around with us, because it would be like, why would we? I mean, when you see ants crawling around on the ground, do you get down and like try and understand what they're doing? No. Even if they're, you know, destroying like a banana or something, like you don't mess with it, because it's like, who cares?
And yeah, civilizations, like our organized civilizations, I guess. I mean, I don't know where you. I guess it depends on where you interpret the dawn of civilization, but I'd normally associate it with the agriculture and when people started having cities and stuff. I mean, these things have only been around for, you know, around 10,000 years or less. Our civilization is, you know, you can say that it's 10,000 years old, but what about a civilization that's 10 million years old, or maybe even longer, let's say, you know, a billion years old?
Well, Nick,
how advanced would they be compared to us? Look how quickly our technology evolves every year. I mean, we went from having, you know, computers the size of warehouses to now having much more computing power just in our cell phones.
You know, oddly enough, Nick, this actually ties back into the global warming thing. At the end of the article that I was talking about, they talk about the Fermi paradox. Now, the Fermi paradox is the thought experiment of why, if aliens are so ubiquitous in the universe, why have we not made contact with them? And there's a myriad of theories proposed for that. One of them is called the Great Filter, which is that industrial societies like ours only last for a few hundred years because we destroy ourselves. So essentially, there are probably millions, if not billions, of societies like ours throughout the universe, but we can't quite get past the stage we're at now, which would be how to travel these distances or how to communicate between these distances. And maybe it's not even possible. Now, that doesn't explain why we're not getting any radio waves from them, which is very mysterious. And I'm not claiming to understand the Fermi paradox, because I frankly don't. But there could be some kind of limit in the universe of, like, you know, when a society starts using technology the way we're using it right now, there just may be a cutoff point in how far they can advance. And if they do advance far enough, quite frankly, I think if aliens are out there, I think they probably live in virtual environments. Or because of why would you want to? It's like rich people. Rich people don't hang around in, like, crowded areas. They abscond to, like, the hills, right? And in rich homes. And it'd be the same with aliens. They're not going to live in these cosmically violent places where there are gamma rays and asteroids and whatnot. They're going to abscond and upload to safer virtual environments. So that's what I think about that. Not that that's what you asked me about. In fact, what did you ask me about?
It sounds interesting. That does sound interesting. I was thinking that if and when we experience aliens on Earth, they would probably drones. Probably, you know, it'd probably be someone's technology.
It'd be like AI. It'd be like an AI probe.
Yeah.
Like an anal probe. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, basically. Back to that. But think about it. It's the same thing we do. You know, when we send out a probe into outer space, you know, we know that it's going to be gone for a long time. We don't want to risk somebody's life to fly in that thing. And, you know, so we just send out a probe that's mechanical or is a smart, you know, AI. Soon that's what we're going to be doing if we're not already doing already. But if we did experience something, it would probably be something like that.
What the hell happened to DB, man?
I don't know. I think he got abducted.
Nah, he told me he might have to tap out. I think he's doing business deals, man. I think he's like Jared Kushner or like...
He's wheeling and dealing over there.
Wheeling and dealing. I think he's doing some Russia deals.
He's like the Jared Kushner of the Midwest now.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
Now, Nick, my mind is all over the Fermi paradox right now because I'm working on this article about the simulation argument. And I found this.
I'd rather talk about this than about politics because
it's an escape. No, but see, I found a way to tie it in. I didn't want to just do just another simulation argument thing. So I figured out why people are so obsessed with this simulation argument, the Matrix argument. And it's actually a very recent phenomena, and it started in with the Matrix came out, and then in 2000 the Matrix came out in 1999, and then in 2003 Nick Bostrom wrote a paper called The Simulation Argument, and since then it's been with technology it's been this exponential growth of this idea of simulation, and I think it ties directly into our anxieties about technology and our anxieties about not being able to explain the current world we live in. But anyway, that's just a preview. I'll let people wait till the article comes out.
Simulated reality, that's a trippy one. Very, very, very interesting conversation, and a lot of people are taking it more seriously as of late. While we're on the sci-fi stuff, Jake, I don't know if you saw this article on theantimedia.org today. In fact, I just made it the top article at the moment on theantimedia.org. U.S. government on verge of reading minds. And so this one is
God helmet.
Yeah,
there he is. There's our boy.
Right?
The God helmet. The God helmet was brought about through some research by the Martian scientists of Hungary. You guys should Google that.
We were worried about you for a second there, man. We were talking about aliens, and we thought maybe...
It turns out he was doing acid in the bathroom.
You were just doing mushrooms.
It's not going to be aliens that take me. It's going to be interdimensional beings that pull me up, I hope.
I think he was listening while he was being quiet.
He's back.
this thing is really crazy. So it's being researched by the Carnegie Mellon University, but it's being funded by the U.S. government, the same agency that oversees like all of our intelligence services and stuff. So this is now basically, I mean, they're not deploying it yet for like intelligence gathering or anything, but this is now it's real now. Like it's like 80-something% accurate. Let me see, where's the actual statistic? 87% accuracy in predicting, based on scanning somebody's brain, what they were thinking. So this technology is, to me, very, very concerning. I mean, dude, like, do we really want someone to be able to be going around, driving around in a truck, scanning people's brains while they're just driving through and just saying, oh, that person's a thought criminal, that person's thinking something bad? Like, this, to me, seems very, very concerning. DB, man, what do you think about this?
I sent you something like maybe a week ago about how California was going to be pioneering this pre-crime, which was going to use social media as your algorithm so they can track your metadata and take preemptive, preemptive action against you, because I guess they're finding that primarily among people that are doing like mass shootings, they're almost always acting out on social media even months beforehand. And that precedent is really, really going to, it's not going to be used for that. It's going to be used for political dissidents. So if you have, I don't know, any kind of social media platform full of controversial stuff, well, they're going to use that to preemptively, I don't know, arrest you before you go to a protest or who knows what.
Well, yes. They've been working on the Defense Department has been working on something called the Sentient World Simulation for like over a decade now. And the Sentient World Simulation is a supercomputer that's basically, it's real-time data, and they're using real-time data and continuously updating it to try and predict like social paradigms, and they're trying to use it to predict social behavior so that they can try and predict like when like people will riot and stuff like that. Now, I haven't heard about the one you're specifically talking about in terms of actually like reading our minds, but the government has actively been trying to there's no doubt. I mean, they want complete control, and they'll stop at nothing to get complete control. And the technology to read our thoughts, I mean, that's just, it's not even science fiction anymore. I mean,
is this going to be a line in the sand where people go finally, you know what, this convenience just isn't worth it? Because
no, there is no line in the sand to America.
It will be. I mean, it's going to be used against the average Joe. This is what this is all about. It's not about taking out the elites because they already blackmail them. So this is about basically finding out who you are before you even know and getting rid of you.
If you take away beer, there will be a revolution. Beyond that, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Leave the country and come back in through New York City, and you're going to see the future for our country. I mean, the biometric scan to get back in is just it's amazing.
Yeah, dude. It's pretty concerning, man. They could interrogate anybody just by scanning your brain, basically. People, they're already talking about using it in court to use, like, while questioning people to try to get what they were thinking while they were committing a crime, because a lot of that has to do with how guilt, you know, what kind of sentencing you get. You know, if you murder somebody out of just a crime of passion, it's a much lesser sentence to where if you were thinking about, you know, planning on killing them just for some, you know, evil reason or whatever it is. They're already talking about using this technology in courts. So this is just very, very it's post Orwellian, I guess you could say, because this is now we're coming up on technology where like police state capable technology where Orwell hadn't even thought about this stuff yet. So we can't even call it Orwellian anymore. It's post Orwellian.
Yeah, that means Philip K. Dick came up with it, man. Philip K. Dick, you know, he the author of Minority Report. I mean, that dude predicted everything. I mean, that dude.
It was almost like he knew. I mean, what? That's just crazy.
No, I mean, he was.
I mean, wasn't he rubbing shoulders with, like, I don't know, the people that were actually inventing technology in high society in London at that time? Because he was like one of those gentlemen's clubs members.
No. Philip K. Dick was a blue collar worker, man.
I'm thinking of Orwell. Sorry.
Oh yeah. No, Dick was writing to get paid, man. He was pumping out novels to get paid. What?
Sorry.
Well, yeah, Dick. Yeah, Dick. Dick yeah, the was word, just the pumping word. Novels, just pumping them night and day.
Dick was pumping, dude. But Orwell was he was rubbing. You're right. He was rubbing shoulders. He was very much part of the political elite establishment of his time.
Because MI6 is the granddaddy of all. Secret society, or not secret, well, I guess secret society in a way, because that's who they recruit from. But I mean, they were the first true, like, intelligence services in the West, at least. So, yeah, he was privy to everything way before it ever came out.
But again, I mean, Dick was, I mean,
you can't stop talking about that guy. yeah, dude, this is some wild stuff. I mean, like, the question DB had is, like, where do we draw the line? Where is it? But I tend to agree with Jake here. Like, I don't feel like anybody is making any kind of stink about anything about privacy, man. Like, what has happened since Snowden blew the whistle on the NSA and stuff?
Seriously. There's been
the USA Freedom Act, which basically... was a privatization of the Patriot Act. That's really all it was. It didn't really reduce by any big measure the amount of spying. It just changed some of the technical aspects and created a couple of new loopholes and privatized the majority of it. So now your phone company does all the work, and the NSA just comes along whenever they need it, and they say, oh yeah, by the way, we need all this guy's metadata. Okay, here you go. Like, so, you know, it's kind of genius if you look at it that way. But
yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
USA Freedom Act. So everyone was like, oh yeah, this is awesome. This is going to be like, you know, we're going to stick it to the NSA. But at the end of the day, not much changed at all. In some ways it got worse. People felt like, oh, this problem has been solved. And meanwhile, our privacy just gets worse and worse. I mean, especially with these big data companies like Facebook and Google and stuff. Of course, we use their services all the time. You probably found our website through Facebook. But like, we're sacrificing so much privacy right now. It's ridiculous. Like, even the stuff you say when you're not even planning on having audio being recorded, that stuff is already getting recorded and tapped into. And now they got like these, what's the Amazon, thing, Alexa, and then the Google Home device and all these things. Like, they're like putting microphones right there out in the open, like,
yeah,
normal.
And they're
guys, say everything you're thinking into here, and we're going to ingest it and serve you up an awesome, profitable experience on our end. You know what I mean? Like,
they're recording it. They're recording when they're off. When you turn your devices off, they're still recording. This was proven.
Yeah.
They're in your ass. Like, they're in your ass. Like, if there was ever a time to rebel, it would be now. Like, the government and the corporations combined, the corporatocracy, they have surpassed with flying colors anything that Orwell and Huxley imagined. And no one gives a fuck. People routinely argue with me about, you know, whether these things are bad. These are manifestly bad things. These are manifestly unconstitutional things, manifestly unethical things. And yet you have people with such cognitive dissonance that they're seriously arguing that because, like, the same number of people that die from a lightning bolt every year, that it's worth, that that justifies ubiquitous surveillance, real-time surveillance of us at every given, they're looking at us right now. As I speak right now, my webcam is feeding information to a private company, and that information is tappable by the government. And you're absolutely right that the government escaped the loophole by using private companies, because private companies do not have to provide their source code. They're protected legally. Legally, they do not have to provide their source code or their operations.
Also, kind of, it also makes them safe from, like, the FOIA requests too, in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, so it shields them from any kind of transparency, and it's just it's even worse. But I honestly don't see many people being too concerned about privacy and stuff, and it's like Orwell, except it's not forced on people, and it's not like, oh God, the TV screen's looking at me and hearing me and stuff. It's like, oh, awesome, the TV screen's hearing me and looking at me. I'll pay for that service. Like, it's like, whoa, wait, damn, these guys are smart as hell. They tricked us all into doing all this shit, and we're paying for it too. It's like,
look at this dancing show. She's hot. I like her dress.
It's like, wow, I can't believe they got us that good, but they did. And I mean, shit, bro. Like, you know, I'm sitting here. I got my my camera covered on my laptop. You know, I'm careful about what I say around this computer, because I know damn well that if it ain't Google or Facebook tapping into it, well, then it's someone even more nefarious.
Well, you're broadcasting on a radio right now, so
we're using Skype to, which, you know, interfaces with our radio, and Skype is owned by Microsoft. You know, and Microsoft is still one of the richest, biggest companies out there. So, yeah, dude. I mean, we're making use of the services, but at the same time, we're sacrificing so much privacy. And if people don't, like, actively begin to counteract these invasions of privacy, well, then we're going to be moving forward with a whole different, I guess, way of doing things as humans, because for so long we had private thoughts and private, you know, conversations and things like that, and now all of our conversations are being recorded, and now the government is getting the ability to read our thoughts. So we're entering into a post-privacy era, I guess you could say, that is, it's going to have so many implications. I like a lot of what Snowden had to say about privacy, and how knowing that you're not having privacy, you censor yourself, and it starts to become a First Amendment type of free speech issue where you start censoring your own conversations, and by doing that you start censoring your own thoughts just because you know somebody could potentially be listening in on what you're trying to say, and you don't want to sound bad, and you know, you want to limit the things that you say because you don't want it to be used against you. Like, this is going to have major, major implications on our political dialogue. It's going to have major implications on our society in general, dude. Like, this is going to change everything if we don't.
Think about
our privacy. It's going to change everything.
Like, think about, like, I mean, not to deify Snowden too much, but I mean, he made a decision to try and reveal this information before we even knew what was going on. I don't think you can overstate what a tremendous act it was, what he did. I mean, and, you know, I haven't even seen the movie. I haven't even seen Oliver Snowden's movie, and I haven't finished watching Citizen Four. But Snowden's a hero of mine, and, you know, whether or not you think he's too much of a leftist or whatever your thoughts of Snowden are, I mean, that I mean, without, imagine if Snowden hadn't done what he did. And imagine, then imagine the people that haven't done what Snowden did, revealing even more. So, you know, he very likely only revealed like a tip of the iceberg. Imagine how much more there is. I mean, do you really think that we know everything? Bullshit. Like, there's a lot more going on that we don't know about. And that's why I'm a conspiracy theorist, and that's why I believe in conspiracies, because what we find out is just a tip of the iceberg. And it's very nefarious. Imagine how much is going on that we don't find out about. Imagine how many plans to disclose information that gets foiled that we never find out about. It's really terrifying, dude.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it really is. And just having these whistleblowers give us a glimpse of what's going on, it is a huge service. But back to what I was saying about the USA Freedom Act, I mean, is that really the extent of our reform? Like, is that all we wanted? Was a bullshit legislation that was deceptively named that basically did nothing to improve our privacy? And that's it? Snowden's sacrifice was only for that? I think Snowden has the same problem that I think we have in some ways, is that he gives a shit about something that most people just don't, right? People don't care about their damn privacy anymore because they don't really understand the implications of living in a privacy-free world. Unfortunately, I don't... And when we post articles about privacy and the NSA and stuff like that, and I, to be honest, dude, I don't think people really give that much of a shit about their privacy. It's unfortunate because it's so important, but they don't care. They don't care. And the thing about privacy is it's kind of like free speech too. In a way, it's like if you don't exercise it, sooner or later it becomes worthless. And by the time you realize, oh shit, I do need to exercise it, well then it's too late because it's already so far gone. Once privacy is completely eroded, like once we all have listening devices inside of our houses, if you don't already have one.
You mean the smartphone?
Yeah, like, you know, the smartphones and the...
You mean a free Obama phone?
The Alexas and the Google Homes and all that stuff. Like, if you don't already have that stuff, you will soon. And
if you talk to your TV, your TV's talking to your big brother.
Yeah, and the Samsung TVs, you know. Jake, you've written about those on a few occasions. You know, this stuff will... You know, once we fully give it up, well, then when we realize, when it starts becoming obvious that...
What are they going to do with sex bot film? I mean, Jesus, talk about blackmailing the public.
Yeah, I was actually about to bring that up. They're going to... The virtual reality is going to be a heavily surveilled technology. And they'll have every desire, every aspect of yourself the government is going to know about. So just digest that for a minute.
Including your sex bots.
revel in your debauchery, people. Otherwise, if you have some shame in your game, they're going to bring it up at some point.
Yeah. That's the problem is, you know, I think here's the thing, dude. People tend to enjoy their personal privacy, right? When you're at home and you're doing things you do at home, walking around naked or whatever you do, you like to, you have the peace of mind knowing, okay, no one else is watching me right now, right? But is that actually true considering that they're listening and that if you have a camera set up, if you got your phone set up in the wrong position, the video can be getting captured.
If they got all the film of you on the toilet you could imagine.
Yeah, you're paying, and remember, we're paying them. Like our tax money is going to pay for the NSA. So essentially, you're paying someone to watch you naked.
Yeah, and we're paying for the Verizon or the AT&T phone service or whatever. Whoever.
Shouldn't we be getting paid? Like, could we start a class action to be paid for our like entertainment services?
We need a consumer union where we all form a union. We boycott all the phone services. Make them start paying us for all of our data. The data is more valuable than the services they offer anyway, dude. The data is the most valuable thing because they can get you to, they can use that data to get you to buy a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I'm only okay with paying for their infrastructure if they're going to bury it underground so it's EMP proof or whatever. Those lazy ass bastards. Even China's doing that now. You can't tell me we can't do it.
Oh, man. Yeah, so yeah, we're paying for it too. That's the worst part. We're paying for our own demise.
I like
that. There's always Paraguay where everything is legal.
You guys hear about that weed situation down in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I heard they've been just filling jails with people that are dumb enough to have 1.0001 ounces on them.
I mean, other than just Las Vegas, I mean, the whole city, the whole state of Nevada, you know, legalized recreational cannabis under certain conditions, of course. But they run out of weed. Do you guys hear about this? Like, they ran out of weed.
I did hear about it. Didn't they declare a state of emergency?
They declared a statement of emergency, and by doing that, they allowed what they're trying to do is allow for more distributors. So actually, we reported on this last week, and I guess it is a little ironic. The state of Nevada had limited marijuana distribution permits to only to existing alcohol distributors. And therefore, the amount of distributors for marijuana were very limited, and obviously the supply chain wasn't very strong, and it's obviously new as well. It started going on sale like last week, and it's already run out. And so they declared the statement of emergency so that they can grant permits to non-alcohol distributors. So the alcohol industry basically effectively had a monopoly set up on this, and we looked into it, and of course they were like lobbying the damn state legislature, and they made campaign contributions, and then of course they became the sole monopoly that was able to distribute marijuana. But because of the emergency, they're saying, okay, anybody can apply who, you know, I'm sure there's standards, but you know, everyone else can start applying. So that's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, the government, again, like they're just trying to – they can never just let something be. Like, how awesome is the cannabis industry because the government really can't do anything about it? Like, how awesome is it? Nobody has died. Nobody has died from weed yet. So to tell me
that – Well, just wait until Monsanto gets their hands on it though, Nick.
I mean, to say that the government needs to come in and regulate the cannabis industry and say, oh, yeah, well, we need to make sure it's safe and we need to make sure it's this and make sure it's that. Yeah, well, what the hell?
We need to make sure it's got Roundup.
Like, what in the hell are they doing about opiates? I thought they were in charge of making sure that all that was good, too. That's what's killing most of the people right now. So, like, dude, like.
But that's excellent business, Nick.
We don't need the government to come in regulating industries that are already doing fine on their own. If you got an industry that's killing a bunch of people, then okay, I could maybe understand the argument could be made for that. Not saying I would support it, but I can understand the argument. But the damn cannabis industry kills nobody, and it generates billions and billions and billions of dollars in revenues for all of these areas where they have these businesses at. And the government wants to come in and say, well, we're going to set up a monopoly here in Nevada and only these guys can distribute it. And it's like, okay, well, congratulations. 1 week in and you've already run out of product because you guys suck. So the cannabis industry, this is what bugs me the most about all the reform. The reform is cool. But along with reform comes massive regulation and taxation. You don't need all that stuff. Cannabis was fine on its own. It enriches small farmers. It enriches small business owners. And they don't need to be taxed because they use the money. Dude, all the growers that I know, the people that sell weed and all that stuff,
he's a distinguished gentleman.
They contribute a lot to their communities. They don't need to be taxed. They already put money back in to the whole system. Like, that's what I think people don't get. You tax them, take the money out. Well, then that money doesn't go to the community around where the businesses are. It goes to the damn bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. and their homies who have made campaign contributions who own large businesses. So in the end, taxation, it tends to be a redistribution of wealth from the smaller, decentralized, you know, business owner, and gives it to the more centralized bureaucracy. You know, whoever's closest to the bureaucracy gets the money. And so that's what bugs me, and it's showing its ugly head here in Nevada because, you know, they're running out of supplies and stuff. So it gives us a good opportunity to kind of look at that. Here in California, we just approved a ballot measure in the last election where it was going to legalize recreational marijuana. Now, right now, we're in this pretty cool, like, kind of, what would you call it? I forget what you would say, but we're in this time frame where it's legal recreationally here in California, but it's not regulated yet. And they're drafting all the regulations which go into effect at the beginning of next year on New Year's. So right now, legal marijuana, recreational marijuana is legal, but there isn't really legal marijuana storefronts or anything like that.
In other words, buy some land and get your op going.
Yeah. So it's like we're in this time frame where it's kind of a gray area and we can do a lot more. You can kind of do what you want. But at the same time, as it becomes recreationally legal starting next year and they draft all these regulations, well, then there's going to be a bunch of taxes and stuff that are going to go into place. And, you know, we all know what happens when taxes come into place. The prices go up and then more people have to compete and then the profit margins go down. I mean, it's all predictable stuff. But do we really need the government to come in and say, oh, well, we're going to regulate cannabis, we're going to tax cannabis, we're going to take your money, we're going to do...
Can't you just get a restraining order against the Fed, Nick? I mean...
That'd be nice, right? That'd be really nice.
I mean, can't the sheriff just physically be like, get out?
The regulation sucks, but if it's people spending their lives in prison for it, you know, it's one evil over the other, I guess.
And that's why in the end, I do support legalization, full legalization. And unfortunately that comes with the overregulation, which it's an unnecessary evil. But it comes with the territory. If you want to legalize marijuana, you also have to appease the liberals that say, okay, well, you know, if we're going to legalize it, we got to use it and tax it and, you know, use it to fund some awesome programs for people. And it's like, yeah, fine. You guys got good intentions and okay, fine. But if that comes with the territory, so be it. At least we're not putting people in chains for smoking weed and doing coke or whatever. And that brings me to the next article here. I mean, some good coverage on drugs today. Oregon legislature passes bill to decriminalize cocaine, meth, heroin, MDMA, LSD. I'm guessing mushrooms are probably already decriminalized up there along with marijuana. I know marijuana for sure is already legal in Oregon. So this is a step in the right direction. They've essentially defelonized it. Now they're not the first state really. I think, California did it first, a year and a half ago or so. What was it, Prop 47, something like that? Here in California, they defelonized drug possession for personal use. So, of course, you can still get arrested and thrown in jail if you're caught selling drugs, but generally speaking, if you get caught possessing personal amounts, it's not going to be a felony. You're not going to go to jail. You'll get a citation. You have to go to court and everything still, but it's, you're not going to be going to jail for it. So, you know, that's kind of a, I guess it's a step in the right direction, because drugs need to be legal. They need to be dealt with. Drug addiction needs to be dealt with as a health issue, not a criminal issue. The fact that we're criminalizing drug addicts, it may be the single worst domestic policy in the United States, because what we're doing is we're getting people who have health issues and we're putting them in prison because of their health issue. That is very, very inhumane. I mean, obviously, foreign policy is a huge disaster in the United States, but the drug policy is the second biggest thing, I think. And Oregon, thankfully, is taking a step in the right direction. Jake, you know, I know you're staying up in Portland right now. I mean, this law, I'm not saying you're doing all these drugs or anything, but what do you think about this? Do you think this is like a good thing? You think people are going to be all cracked out on the street in your neighborhood now, or do you think it's going to be, you know, a positive thing?
I mean, it's drug decriminalization is always a good thing. I mean, drugs should never be criminalized. Any crime that is caused by drugs is going to be there whether they're legal or not. I mean, all of the drug problems we have are there with drugs being illegal. So the law hasn't worked very well. And in fact, conversely, we have legal drugs like opiates and alcohol causing far more problems than anything else. So clearly, the legalization has nothing to do with the problem whatsoever. The problem is that we have a society constructed in which people desperately need to escape from their own lives. And I think that's the bigger problem. And of course, even worse is that we have no safety net, social safety nets, not financial safety nets, but we don't have a mental illness infrastructure set up for people to understand what's happening to their brains when they become addicted to things. And I think that's the bigger problem. And yeah, I mean, with respect to the Oregon bill, I mean, I think I've always been an advocate for drug legalization. And, you know, I mean, it's such a convoluted issue. I mean, there's no happy ending here, really. But people should not be spending their lives in prison for substance abuse issues. I mean, that's disgusting. And I would agree with you. It's a disgusting issue. Yeah.
Thank you all for tuning in. I'm Time Media Radio. We'll be back. For dreams we pursuing, but call it a reality, cause there's no illusion. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.
Anti-Media Radio, your host.